Maine, it is really fundamentally an American.
Broadcasting from the gulag filling station of planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Our engineer is Steve Nolan. In just a moment, we'll bring you the voice of U.S. Representative John Conyers talking about the American dream that has turned into a nightmare for the rest of the world. We'll also hear from Bob Newland and Jeremy Briggs, the co-publishers of Hemphasis, the magazine which tells us about the 20,000-plus uses of this little plant that could, if we'd only let it. I want to kick today's show off with a little editorial. Drug war policy. This policy is based on nothing more than now thoroughly debunked hysteria, superstition, and ignorance. The only basis, the only reason for the continuation of this drug war is greed. Pure, unadulterated greed. Asking a member of law enforcement what we should do about the drug war is like asking your barber if you need a haircut. Seeking the advice of a treatment provider is a similar exercise in futility. Despite the machinations and distortion of the black market, deaths from the use of heroin remain on par with deaths from aspirin and Tylenol. There is no grace, no bonus, no success whatsoever derived from the current drug war policies. Now, to address the major problems, the U.S. policy of not allowing needle exchange means addicts often share both needle and life expectancies with each fix of heroin or amphetamine. AIDS and hepatitis C are slowly reaping their harvest of death because of moral crusaders whose true bigotry and religious intolerance shows their true compassion for their fellow man. In prison, the inmates who came in as pot growers or minor dealers are often turned on to the joys, the temporary escape of heroin, oftentimes smuggled in by the prison guards. Of course, the lack of needle exchange in prison means tens of thousands of prisoners released each year are returning to their families with a dose of a communicable and life-threatening disease. In the U.S., more than 100,000 male-on-male rapes are reported each year in our prisons, and one can only assume that many more rapes go unreported. This is not the genocide of Hitler, Pol Pot, or Milosevic. This is not the extermination of Auschwitz, or even quite the horror of Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq, though naked romps with prisoners seems quite popular here as well. We must acknowledge the diversity of the horrors inflicted, the tens of millions arrested and incarcerated, the inmates and their families demonized and destroyed. We must see prohibition for what it is, a hopeless failure turned into a knowing, blatant, and horrible infliction of pain and misery on our fellow man for a profit.
I wanted to let the listeners know that we're speaking with U.S. Congressman John Conyers, the ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee and Dean of the Congressional Black Caucus. Welcome once again to Cultural Baggage, sir.
It's a pleasure.
Yes, sir. I received a copy of your letter sent yesterday to the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, where you state your concerns that the Solicitor General of the U.S. Justice Department, quote, may have knowingly or recklessly communicated false and misleading information to the United States Supreme Court. And I wanted to get your thoughts in that regard, sir.
Well, yes. The Solicitor General claimed before the Supreme Court of the United States that we had nothing to do with the crime. The crimes of brutality, rape, torture, embarrassment, assault that were going on there, intimidation. However, there's a bit of a conflict here because the New Yorker article by Cy Hirsch said that that the president was briefed by Rumsfeld, and the Newsweek of today on the newsstand says that not only was he briefed, the president, but so was the attorney general and the Secretary of Defense, whose resignation has been called for prominently in the Congress.
Yes, sir.
So we need a special counsel. That's what special counsels are for, so that the Department of Justice won't have the heavy responsibility of investigating itself.
Yes, sir. Last week, Bob Drogon of the L.A. Times stated, quote, coalition military intelligence officials estimated that 70 to 90% of prisoners detained in Iraq since the war began last year had been arrested by mistake. And these figures were
70 to 90% of the Iraqi prisoners arrested by mistake.
Yes, sir.
That's because they were pulling them off the streets, hauling them out of cabs, checking out people's in-laws. I mean, it was all built around the notion that the president couldn't figure out why we got so much information out of prisoners in Guantanamo and other places and so little out of Iraqi, and that's how Abu Ghraib was born. This is not a rogue soldier's enterprise. This comes from no less than the heads of our government in Washington, D.C.
Another thought I wanted to discuss. Dana Priest and Joe Stevens of the Washington Post wrote that, quote, all told, more than 9,000 people are held by U.S. authorities overseas. This is according to Pentagon figures and estimates by intelligence experts. Your thoughts on that, sir?
Well, what about it? I can't pretend to be shocked anymore. I mean, we're bombing wedding parties by mistake. We've got Abu Ghraib. Now they want to tear the prison down and build a new prison. Like the policy. The prison wasn't doing that. It was the policies and the people in the prison. This wasn't something wrong with the cement in the building.
Yes, sir. Now, these detainees, you know, they have no conventional rights, no access to a lawyer, no chance at a hearing. And, you know, there's no guarantee of human rights at all, according to the Geneva Convention, or even basic human rights. How can this be justified at any level?
Well, I don't think it's justifiable, although you might check with the president's press secretary. He may be able to explain it.
Yes, sir.
But we now find that this isn't a matter of being a congressman or a lawyer or a government scholar. You go to the newsstand, you buy the Newsweek, you turn to page 37, and an investigative journalist tells you they not only planned it, but they were worried about being hauled before the war crimes, the court of war crimes under the Geneva Convention, and they were trying to make sure that it was all kept secret. Now, these are very serious offenses, and we need to know as a member of judiciary whether they're accurate or whether there's a response other than just routine denial by a press secretary or what. And that's what I'm trying to find out.
Or even for the media, it's becoming kind of a sticky wicket, if you will, that to even challenge some of the thoughts being presented by the administration means they want to destroy the messenger more so than the message.
Yeah, and you know, the special counsel isn't saying that we have proof positive of guilt. Quite frankly, if we did, we'd be mulling over impeachment charges. But we're trying to say that did this happen or didn't it? And from this administration, the most secretive on record, we get nothing. So we've got to move ahead. Congress has a duty in it. There are more and more members that are waking up to the fact that whether these kinds of practices that plummet our respect around the world are going to be allowed to go on or whether they'll be cut out.
Yesterday in Houston, there was a protest at the Halliburton stockholders meeting regarding, you know, what the protesters say is war profiteering in the U.S. oil oligarchy. And I wanted your thoughts on our arrangements, worldwide contracts with independent people to provide, you know, security service and so forth, like DynCorp does for the drug war down in Colombia.
These independent contractors are creating a bit of a problem, aren't they?
Yes, sir.
They're not under anybody's control, and apparently some of them do just about anything that comes into their mind. And that's all part of the investigation that will have to be gone into.
All right. All right. Now, insofar as those held by the military in Afghanistan and Guantanamo and so forth, some of them have had visits by the International Committee of the Red Cross, and yet some of the CIA detainees have, in fact, disappeared. Please just talk about that point, sir.
Well, these are all things to be determined. The Red Cross was given a hard time because they were complaining about the conditions. They had reported it to Rumsfeld and others for months and months before it broke. You know, how much can you be shocked with every time you get a new body, a new brutality, a new video, a new prison camp in which they're turning it into an interrogation center? I mean, you run out of shock value.
Yes, sir. It's time for action,
if
you ask me.
It's time for action.
Each year here in the U.S., we arrest 1.6 million people for drugs, and the predominant amount of those arrested are blacks, then Hispanics, and then whites, you know, at least in correlation to their representation. But many have said the drug war is a continuation of slavery or the poll tax, or it's just the best means available to continue white supremacy in this modern era. And your thoughts on that, sir?
Well, the fact that there is a racial factor to who's arrested, locked up, gets the longest sentences, the most death penalties, the most brutality, the most abusive process, clearly race plays a role in it. I can't deny that. The question is, how are we going to marshal the forces to do something about it against those who say, well, so what? They did something wrong, lock them up and throw the key away. I don't think that's any longer an acceptable approach toward criminal justice problems.
Now, just as in New Jersey, they had this modus operandi, and though they said the practice of racial profiling was not being used, their method was actually found to be institutionalized and taught around this nation. And can we not see a correlation, another type of bigotry being practiced in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Guantanamo Bay?
Well, you know, sometimes it's religiously motivated, sometimes it's ethnically motivated, sometimes it's motivated against nationality. We need some sociologists and psychiatrists to help us out.
I wanted to close this out with one last question. I know you're a great jazz aficionado,
you're going to play a Coltrane to conclude.
I'll put it in the background during this part of the interview. Harry J. Anslinger, our first drug czar, and he and William Randolph Hearst made sure that lots of stories, and I call it propaganda, were published in trying to get marijuana made illegal. And mostly they alluded to the fact that many of the users of marijuana were black musicians. And to further demonize these users, they were sure to point out that it was jazz musicians. And your thoughts on that, sir?
I'm disappointed to know that happened, but I can't say I'm surprised. Racism is not not a logical operation. I thought you were going to play Coltrane.
Oh, I don't. No, sir, I'll have to overlay it behind the track. You know, we can do this on track one, I'll put it on track two.
Okay. Well, take good care. And let us stay in touch, because this resolution will be sent forthwith to the Attorney General.
Yes, sir. And as always, it's wonderful to talk with you, and we certainly will continue this dialogue.
John Coltrane and a sentimental man. Thank you. return to the American justice system of just 100 years ago, before the advent of these corporate powers that now seek to run every aspect of our lives. Thank you, Congressman Conyers. And now we're going to take a little break, play Name That Drug by its side effects, and hear about the volcano vaporizer. It takes the smoking out of smoking marijuana.
Marijuana may not cause the overdose deaths like heroin, but it's just as dangerous.
For as long as man has been recording history, marijuana has shown itself to be of great benefit in fighting anxiety. It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects. Anorexia, nausea, insomnia, constipation, or diarrhea and loose stools, agitation, tremors, decreased libido, and failure to ejaculate. Time's up. The answer, Zoloft. Another FDA-approved product.
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of Drug Sense. You're listening to Cultural Baggage. To end the drug war, visit MAPINC.org. That's MAPINC.org. Get active, stay aware, stay informed, and let's bring an end to this nonsense.
I'm hungry.
George W. Bush and the suppression of medical cannabis is killing vastly more people and causing vastly more human suffering than even Saddam Hussein could in his worst days. And this is something that the cannabis movement and the peace movement and progressive people every place have to address. If they aren't addressing medical cannabis, they are ignoring something that has an enormous impact on millions of people. Well, if they're too serious to, they can't talk about mass murder, then they have their priorities all screwed up.
Richard Cowan, Cannabis News. Noted author and marijuana expert Dr. Mitch Earlywine.
They can still smoke cannabis medicinally and not get negative consequences if they're willing to use a vaporizer that will heat the cannabis up to a certain temperature and let the cannabinoids come off in a mist, but not fire up the tars and carcinogens we often associate with lighting it on fire. And they're getting wonderful effects.
The last bastion of the drug warriors is that using marijuana requires you to smoke it. VaporMed out of Germany has now produced a machine that takes the smoking out of smoking marijuana. It's called the Volcano. They say the vaporizing method involves permeating the herbs with hot air, causing the ingredients to vaporize slightly, and thus they reduce the development of harmful substances and odors. Their website, VaporMed.com.
Hi, this is Valerie Corral, and I'm the director of the Women's Alliance for Medical Marijuana, WAM, in Santa Cruz, California. We're a collective of patients and caregivers, and we provide for ourselves and one another medical marijuana at no cost in the true name of a collective. I listen to Cultural Baggage, and obviously you do too. Please support our Constitution and free speech through the Drug Truth Network and Pacifica Radio. Keep free speech alive and free.
All right, from that we go to hemp, the cousin of marijuana, and our discussion with a couple of gentlemen from South Dakota.
We have with us Bob Newland and Jeremy Briggs, the co-publishers of Hemphasis magazine. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi, this is Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, Jeremy. Tell us, if you will, what does Hemphasis alert us to?
Okay, well, this is Bob again. I'll start out. I'm co-publisher with Jeremy of Hemphasis magazine, which is currently, to our knowledge, the only print magazine in the world dealing with hemp consumer information, trade journal for manufacturers and importers, a political analysis of the bad dream that goes on in legislative circles about hemp.
Yeah, our goal is to help organize and consolidate and inform the hemp constituency and try to make it grow and try to get different people to understand what's going on, but most importantly, first and foremost, to organize the people that we already have who agree with us and to give them the tools they need to help the vision spread.
I took a look at your website, hemphasis.net, and it's got all kinds of information there, and I'm looking at the uses for hemp. Tell us, what are some of those uses?
in general, anything that you can make out of cotton or flax or trees or petroleum, you can make out of hemp.
Anything. The only thing you can't make out of hemp is glass and steel. Hemp is the healthiest food source on the planet. It's the only food source that has all 8 essential amino acids and all 4 essential fatty acids. And it also has 35% protein when you take off the seed shell, which is the highest. And it's all in the form of Edison and albumin protein, which are the 2 most easily digestible proteins. It's also the strongest fiber, produces the most biomass per acre of any plant, and it also produces the most cellulose of any plant.
So when you hear all that and you think about all of the competing products that hemp would compete with, you start to get a picture of the behind-the-scenes conspiracy, if you will, to keep hemp off the market.
Well, when you consider the dire straits that our nation and I guess the whole world is in, this energy crunch, if you will, we have the means, the mechanisms to end that problem immediately, do we not?
Well, there's a line out of the China syndrome where somebody's talking about the Arabs holding all the oil, and a guy from the State Department says, "We are the Arabs, you idiot."
Very well said, Bob. Thank you. Tell them what's available on your website.
Well, hemphasis.net, www.hemphasis.net, contains the entire content of Hemphasis Magazine's first edition, which came out in January. The second edition will come out in late August, and we'll post it to the web as well. What's on there is a directory of hemp products and suppliers, several articles about hemp, and an editorial which explains hemp politics, and it's set up in the way that you would browse it just like a magazine. In addition to that, we have we printed 35,000 print copies of Hemphasis and distributed it throughout Montana, North Dakota, Minnesota, Illinois, Colorado, and South Dakota.
And Wyoming.
And Wyoming. We'll print at least 50,000 copies of the second edition, and we distribute it free, and we have a network now of around 300 distributors who will each get rid of about 30 copies to people who are interested in hemp.
A calendar of all the different hemp-related activities that are going on, a directory of all the different products that are being sold in different categories, and how really there's really nothing that can justify getting rid of hemp.
Now, has not the DEA suffered some rather serious setbacks in regards to hemp here of late?
The DEA doesn't understand setbacks. When it gets an adverse ruling in the court, it generally ignores it and goes on and arbitrarily makes life miserable for the next person they feel like busting.
But the HIA did just beat the DEA in court, so hemp food is completely legal and delicious and nutritious. You know, pretty much all emotional and energy problems can be attributed to a lack of essential fatty acids. Hemp is the only substance that has all 4 of them, and it has them in the proportions that are recommended by health experts. And it also has rare essential fatty acids like GLA and LNA, which are good for nursing babies and pregnant mothers.
We've shot ourselves in the foot so many times. I wonder when it's going to start to hurt.
It's hurting.
It doesn't hurt the people who designed this. There's a political background to this that is so weird that it defies credibility to try to explain what it is. They are becoming more obvious in what they're doing.
Indeed they are. I understand you guys have a California tour coming up. Could you tell me more about that?
We plan to distribute about 10 to 15,000 copies of the second edition of Hemphasis throughout the state of California in the later months of October and the month of November. There's a number of different hemp festivals that take place that time, as well as the annual HIA convention takes place the weekend after the election.
Okay, now we're going to open the mic to Bill Piper of the Drug Policy Alliance out of Washington, D.C. He's going to fill us in on this effort that we're trying to put together for June 4th, when the Congress will once again vote on the need to continue this war on medical marijuana patients. We really could use your help, so please get a paper and pen handy, and you can get involved with us.
Sure. I'm Bill Piper, Director of National Affairs for the Drug Policy Alliance.
Bill, I understand there's an event, a concurrence, if you will, of ideas and thought going to happen on June 1st. Tell my listeners what that's all about.
Well, June 4th is a National Day of Action on Medical Marijuana, and the Drug Policy Alliance, in conjunction with the Marijuana Policy Project, NORMAL, and other national drug policy reform groups, we're going to be doing a variety of actions around the country in front of offices of members of Congress that voted against medical marijuana amendment last year. We're passing out brochures to people in the neighborhood surrounding their campaign offices that, you know, in effect will say on the front, you know, Congressman so-and-so thinks AIDS and cancer patients should go to jail, and then on the back it gives a little bit more detail. We'll probably be doing some press conferences in a few districts and, of course, national press. And this is kind of a kickoff for what's a major campaign over the next couple of months. Last year, 152 members of Congress voted to prohibit the U.S. Justice Department from spending any money to undermine medical marijuana laws in the eight states that have enacted them. That was about 65 votes short of what we needed to win, but more than what anyone thought we could get. This year, our goal is to win, or at the very least, to increase the numbers. So we're looking at members of Congress that voted against the amendment last year that we think might vote for it, might be persuaded to vote for it this year. So we're going to try to put a little pressure on them and basically show them that what this vote is about, and ultimately what it's about, is keeping, you know, AIDS and cancer patients, or, you know, other terminally ill patients that use marijuana for medical reasons, out of jail. And if they vote against this amendment, they're essentially voting to send sick people to jail.
Once again, if you want to learn more about this outreach to our U.S. congressmen, please visit mpp.org, normal.org, that's NORML.org, or drugpolicy.org. I urge you to join us next week when our guest will be the first result of Project Houstredam, Houston City Councilwoman Ada Edwards, and we'll be talking drug policy right here on Cultural Baggage with our first locally elected official. Here's some more great news that comes to us from Rob Campia, head of the Marijuana Policy Project. He says, the number of states that protect medical marijuana patients from arrest and prison is about to jump from 8 to 9. Yesterday, the Vermont legislature approved the Marijuana Policy Project's bill to protect medical marijuana patients from arrest, and Vermont's Republican governor announced that he will let the bill become law. Time for one last closing thought. U.S. policy says if a person is caught by their school principal, their boss, or law enforcement, they are considered to be marijuana abusers, needing at least treatment, if not months or years in prison. If we cannot keep drugs out of our prisons, how can we conceive of the possibility of keeping them out of our free society? In closing, I remind you that because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag, so please, be careful. For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Jap dancing on the edge of an abyss.